Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today, per usual, by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated and Pete Sampson of The Athletic, but also a special guest star for today's show, Notre Dame Vice President and James E. Rohr, Director of Athletics, Pete Vacqua. Welcome, Pete.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
And we're going to try to call Pete Sampson by his last name this entire podcast, just for sake of clarity as we go back and forth. But Pete Bavakwa's presence on this podcast proves timely as Notre Dame Tuesday reached a multi-year deal with SoFi Technologies that will place SoFi's company brand on Fighting Irish jerseys in every sport beginning this fall. We hear a six-year deal worth about $18 to $20 million, but I think it's probably better to turn it over to you now, Pete, to discuss how this went down and what it means for Notre Dame going forward.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. You know, we're excited about it. This started, I had conversations with Father Bob, our president, and John V. Meyer, our chair, in late spring. And we talked about kind of everything going on in college sports, as we always do, and obviously the need for resources and the need to do everything we can to retain and continue to invest in our 26 programs, 13 men's programs, 13 women's programs, and start to talk about the concept of doing a deal like this. Would Notre Dame ever get comfortable with a patch deal? And as we talked more and more about it, you know, we came to the conclusion that if it were the right company and wasn't just about putting a patch on our most visible uniforms, our football jerseys, but more of an investment in our athletic department and in our roughly 740 student athletes, like, let's go out there and see if that exists. And then I would tell you, you know, my experience in the world of putting these types of deals together, whether you go back to my time at, whether it's the USGA, CAA, PGA of America, NBC, when deals are meant to be, they usually come together very quickly. And they're usually, quite frankly, pretty easy to put together. And that's how this came about. You know, we did not go into the broad marketplace. We went and had in SoFi, they started conversations with us. And we know Anthony Noto, who's their CEO. I've known Anthony for years, a West Point grad, but a Notre Dame parent, which is very important. His daughter, Ellie, was a four-year member of our women's lacrosse team. So the advantage was that, you know, Anthony really got to know Notre Dame over the course of the last few years, and quite frankly, got to know Notre Dame through the eyes of a student athlete, which was very important. So as we started talking to SoFi, again, it wasn't just about running out of the tunnel at Notre Dame Stadium with patches on our football jerseys. It's what can we do to help us maintain an authentic, credible student athlete experience for our 740 student athletes? How can they help us invest in our men's and women's sports? How can they help us deliver on our Four for Forever promise? Because we put a new strategic plan together for the athletic department late last year, and those are the cornerstones of the strategic plan. It's in this age of modern college athletics, which are changing at such a rapid pace, I really believe an unprecedented pace, how do we hang on and continue to focus on our North Star, which is that student athlete experience? And I don't shy away from that because it is incredibly real here at Notre Dame. Whether you're CJ Carr or the 65th rower on our rowing team, you are truly a Notre Dame student athlete. And some people raise their eyebrows when I say that, but there are no ifs, ands, and buts about that. And people need to understand that. You're going to class. You're going to class in person. You're keeping up your grade point average. You're getting tutoring. You're going to academic services. And that all appealed to SoFi. And what also appealed to SoFi in this age of NIL and athlete compensation is to help us with financial literacy, which again helps us deliver on our Four for Forever promise. And when athletes and student athletes come here to Notre Dame, regardless of the sport they play, that's the promise we make to them. Hey, you're going to come here and hopefully you're going to have a wonderful relationship with this university for the time you're here. Whether that's 3 years because you go into the NFL draft like Jeremiah Love, or you're here for 4 years, or you stay for a fifth year and get a master's, that's not where it ends. That's really where it starts, because we want to keep that relationship with you, our student athletes, forever. And this also helps us deliver on the forever element. what can we do here at Notre Dame to keep that level of connectivity with you throughout your lives and also set you up for success regardless of what you do with your Notre Dame education and your Notre Dame degree. And SoFi, that all appealed to SoFi, and that was really important to us. It was important to Father Bob, and it was important to our trustees.
Pete, patches on the uniforms, this was all inevitable, wasn't it? I mean, once we got into the NIL world of college sports, you're either proactive or reactive, and you've been proactive in this situation. Are you the typical fan blow? There'll be a fan blowback because of advertising on the uniform. How do you intend to deal with that? But this was inevitable, right? In the world that we live in now in intercollegiate athletics.
You have to, you know, I always say you have to be a shark. You have to keep moving. Sharks stand still, they die. We have to be aggressive and progressive. We have to try to stay a step ahead of the game. This is a changing landscape. Notre Dame has adapted throughout its history. You know, I think one of the pioneers of change and a progressive nature in college football was the godfather of college of Notre Dame football, Newt Rockne. I mean, when he started to do a series with USC on the West Coast, I mean, that was novel for its time. So Notre Dame has always changed and modernized and put in the turf we have in the stadium and changed from a 59,000 person stadium to now an 81,000 person stadium with Crossroads, and understood the need for a video board in Notre Dame Stadium, and understood the need that regardless of the caliber of coach we have in Marcus Freedom, you need to be aggressive in the NIL space and you need to be opportunistic in the transfer portal. And this follows, Tim. We can't sit on our hands and get around to doing a patch deal 2 or 3 years from now when the market has dried up. I mean, shame on us if that was our approach. So is the patch on the jerseys going to raise some eyebrows? Of course it is, but it's a lot better than being stuck in the mud and having the rest of the country pass us by. We have to take these steps, but we have to do it in a way that Notre Dame is comfortable with, that is in keeping with Notre Dame standards, the Notre Dame brand. And we were not going to do this deal with any company. Like I said, this had to be a company that made sense, that understood this was more than just patches on jerseys. And SoFi and their CEO, Anthony Noto, truly get that.
How do you think the NIL arms race ends? And I ask that in the sense of it feels, everyone says it's unsustainable, and yet the next year, you know, basketball rosters go from 5 million to 10 million to 20 million. Football rosters go from 12 to 30 to 45. What's the end game here?
Pete, it's the key question. It's what's occupying so much of my time now in negotiations in Washington, which have consumed me for the last 4 to 5 days. And I'm sure you've been following that. It is unsustainable at its current annual growth rate. That is unsustainable. But like all markets, it will have to even out and make economic sense. I think we're approaching that point with what it costs for a football roster at a national championship level, a men's basketball roster, a women's basketball roster, and kind of going right down the line. No, I don't believe it's going to go necessarily materially backwards. I do think I've always been, as you've heard me since I've been in this role, a proponent of our student athletes, you know, particularly in those revenue sports being compensated. I think for too long, they weren't compensated. And this is certainly a correction to that as the industry continued to grow, particularly around college football, with the increase in media deals, the increase in exposure and visibility. This had to happen and it should happen. But now it's making sure we do it in a way that's responsible and sustainable. Sustainable so athletic programs can still be healthy. Sustainable so we can still support Olympic sports and women's sports around the country. And sustainable that it's not a drain, an unnecessary and an unfeasible drain on the economic resources of universities around the country. Now, Notre Dame is...
I was going to say, just follow, get into the Protect College Sports Act, because that's kind of like where this is going, right?
Yeah.
You know, the do you understand the Big Ten and SEC's reluctance there? Whether and do you think we get to a point where there is we get to the goals where that you just outlined here in the previous question?
So I have talked to Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti at least 100 times over the course of the last 3 to 4 days. You know, we had a conference call that was reported Sunday night. The Power Four commissioners were on it. So Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti, Brett Yormark, and Jimmy Phillips. I was on it. Senators Cruz, Cantwell, and Schmidt were on that call. Cody Campbell was on that call, as was Randy Levine. And then Teresa Gold from the Pac-12 and Tim Pernetti. And we walked through the bill almost page by page. What works, what doesn't work. There are so many great elements in this bill that will be unbelievably helpful. Sanity to the transfer portal, eligibility, a register for agents so that these student athletes around the country can't be exploited. There are some really good agents, and there are some agents that are exploiting these young kids and charging 18 to 20% commissions. That can't happen. Scholarship protection for student athletes, medical insurance, things Notre Dame does around medical insurance that really need to become the national norm. All of those things are elements that people will agree wholeheartedly on. Then things get a little bit more complicated, and particularly complicated around conference configurations. And we've had a lot of back and forth about that. And we're, as you all know, the three of you know so well, we're in an interesting position. We're a unicorn, if you will, a member of the ACC and most of our Olympic sports, a member of the Big Ten in hockey, and obviously independent in football. We had to make sure there were elements in this bill that protected us in that regard, but also allowed for flexibility. I would say right now, the major issue, if it and where we're going back and forth on a continuous basis with the representative that are representing the senators and drafting the bill and working with the senators, is really around what is a proper cap. And you've read it, you're reading the stories. There's the concept of the House settlement cap. There's a concept of this retention pool that I'm very much in favor of, which will be somewhere, if the bill goes forward, between 20 and $22.5 or $25 million. There's a concept of an additional $5 million that can be utilized for Olympic sports and women's sports that would be exempt from being reduced, having your cap or retention pool reduced. So you start to envision a world where the number is more realistic for what universities are spending on their major programs. When I testified in the Senate, I said, you really can't think of this as a cap. It's an equation. And the equation right now is to, you know, we all learned X plus Y equals Z. That's what it is. X being the cap, Y right now being the gray amorphous space of third-party NIL deals, which is where all the chaos and abuse is taking place. And then Z being the total of what major universities and their collectives and the third-party deals as the sum of that equation being used on rosters. In my opinion, the more of that money realistically we can put in the X part of the equation, what the universities are paying, decrease or eliminate the Y and keep the Z healthy, that's good. And that will allow for transparency and that will limit abuse. And that's what we're trying to fight for. And in this concept of a cap plus a retention pool plus this $5 million allotment for women's sports, that's money for rosters and NIL opportunities that universities could deliver to their student athletes. But we also have to know that there won't be loopholes in the bill just to create another universe above and beyond that of gray space. And that's what we're working on right now in real time. And so do I understand the Big Ten and SEC's reluctance? Absolutely. And I actually think the SEC and the Big Ten, you know, working hand in hand with us, trying to be as effective as possible of walking the senators and their teams who have really done a great job and are so invested in trying to get something done, but just saying, hey, we live this each and every day. We believe we know what can work. And quite frankly, we believe we know that if we don't really tighten this language, we're just going to create a new timeline of illicit NIL deals, abuse, continued a system that continues to be clouded and not transparent. And we need transparency.
Pete, I have a minutia NIL question to ask you, but I feel like since there's patches on the front of the jersey now, as we've discussed, 40 years ago, Lou Holtz took the names off the back of Notre Dame's jerseys because he felt he needed to foster a new team identity. In the name aspect of name, image, and likeness, I keep asking this question, and you're the person to ask now. Can the names go on the back of Notre Dame's athletic jerseys, and does that help the individual athlete's natural NIL earnings? You know, Brady Quinn's number 10 probably still is a top seller without his name on the back in a book.
Yeah, I mean, I would tell you, Tim, and this is accurate as of 12/18. I know this will be today. We have never talked about adding names on the back of jerseys. Marcus has never brought that up. I haven't had one of the student athletes on the football team bring that up. There are no plans to do that. As you know, when we go into the postseason, names are added. I think that's the way it's going to continue. I think the two best, most historic jerseys in the world are Notre Dame football and Yankee baseball, and they have something in common, right?
Also timely, and it takes us back to a conversation we had on this podcast in late May when Texas athletic director Chris Del Conte was basically, I think non-committal would be the word, on the future of the Notre Dame-Texas series for 28 and 29, Notre Dame hosting in 28. At Texas hosting in 29, Longhorns head coach Steve Sarkisian obviously brought that up at SEC Media Days. Is this something that is going to remain fluid through the summer, through the next calendar year? I know penalties have to be invoked if Texas were to not be able to play this series. In your mind, can this series be played?
I think this series will definitely be played. And I talk to Chris Del Conte frequently. He is somebody, he and I talk a lot, bounce ideas off of each other, talk about what's going on, what's University of Texas doing, what are we doing. Every conversation I've had with him, and I've had several over the course of the last few weeks, it's not if the game's going to be played. It's like, okay, can we think about this week, that week, what works best for you, what works best for Texas? Both realizing to get a Notre Dame, Texas home and home, two of the great, biggest, most historic brands in college football who are also doing incredibly well in the here and now. Both universities want that game to be played and are going to play that game. And that is currently the plan for sure.
I have to bring up USC while we're talking about upcoming opponents. We heard that Lincoln Riley tripled down on anytime, anywhere, as far as Notre Dame using that as a statement at the time. Would you have had Coach Freeman say it any differently then, as anytime, anywhere, gave them the wiggle room to lean on a false narrative? Because I don't think there's anybody that doesn't understand that USC was the one that ended this series. Their former players understood that it was USC that ended this series.
Well, I think anywhere, anytime can be taken out of context. Like, you know, we're not going to play them tomorrow afternoon, right? So what Marcus meant and what I meant is, listen, we'll be flexible. We'll move things around. We'll create space. We'll move games. The rivalry is that important to us. And, you know, sitting here today, I am really confident that I know we feel that way. I'm really confident the leadership at USC feels that way. And I believe we're going to get that series back, which would be great for Notre Dame, great for USC, and maybe most importantly, great for college football. Notre Dame and USC have to play each other, should play each other.
I want to just go back to something. When we sat down last August, I think I asked you, like, what does Marcus need? And you were like, actually, we just sat down and I asked Marcus that very question. And he was like, nothing. Since then, Shields Hall is about to open. NIL has, you know, gone upwards. You know, I think admissions is flexible. We see kids reclassifying to come to Notre Dame now. What's the next thing that football needs, if anything at all, now that, you know, kind of the foundation has been as enhanced as much as it has?
I think we need a national championship.
Okay.
Right? 55 years old. I graduated here in 1993, and Notre Dame won a national championship the year before I got here. That can't happen. And, you know, we have the perfect coach for Notre Dame. Not a good coach, not a great coach, literally the perfect coach for Notre Dame. And what he has done for this university and for Notre Dame football is amazing. his belief in Notre Dame, what we stand for, the academic mission, the choose hard. He brings it all. My role is to make sure that he has everything he needs to compete at the highest level. And the university's goal and need is to be aligned. And I would say, Pete, the level of alignment right now from Father Bob to the athletic department, to the football program, to the alumni base, to the trustees, you know, I really think we're firing on all cylinders. And we have unbelievable facilities, particularly now. Wait till you see Shields Family Hall. It is just amazing. Recruiting and talent development is going exceptionally well. Obviously, with Marcus as the leader, I can't speak highly enough of Mike Martin and the job he's done in the GM role. All the pieces are in place. And to win a national championship, right, you have to be good. We're good. You have to stay healthy, fingers crossed. And no matter how good you are, you're going to have to get lucky a couple of times. So you can never say it's going to happen. But the key is to win a national championship, you just got to knock on the door year in and year out, and you're eventually going to knock that door down. And I'm super confident that we're on the right path to do that. And so I think, what does Marcus need? I think he needs more hours in the day. I think he needs more time to take a vacation. I get concerned because I never pass by the parking lot and not see his car there. And often I text him and like, are you, you know, what, he's always here. And I just hope I hope he's enjoying the ride. I know he is. And I think he and his family, and his family that's so key to me, to make sure his family is happy. I believe they're happier right now and more content and more excited about the future of Notre Dame, maybe than ever.
Pete, as a football player, you did have the advantage of the Loftus Sports Center was built at Notre Dame. Prior to that, and in talking to Jack Shields, the one thing I have in common with Notre Dame football is that the football team was practicing near that open space near the old hockey rink, the same way the Notre Dame baseball team was. That's the only thing that I have in common with them. But isn't it like when you see the spectacular nature of Shields, it's almost difficult to believe that that's Notre Dame's facility.
Well, I remember spring my junior year where I participated the most with the football team. I was the guy who stood next to Craig Hendrick. And he couldn't punt in there because he would hit the ceiling. So they would snap it to me and I would throw it to the punt returner. So, and Loftus is a great facility for so many of our sports. And the Goog was amazing. And when it opened, it was state of the art. But we outgrew it. And, you know, we brought the football team in for the first time on Friday to see Shields. And it was one of the great moments I've had since I've been here. To see the excitement in their eyes as they walked into the main entrance, as they saw their lockers, as they went to the weight room. It was just brilliant and wonderful. And, you know, I think football programs are judged in terms of facilities on your stadium. Obviously, Notre Dame Stadium is as good as it gets. Your indoor practice facility, I think the IAC is the best in the country. And I think Shields Family Hall is going to be just kind of redefine what it means to have a football facility. So we are thrilled about that. And the team gets back here this weekend and they go to Shields Family Hall and it's going to be fantastic.
You have a lot of hang time on those throws, Pete, as opposed to Hendrick's punt. You get him up there for the returners.
I tried to, although Craig had a good arm too. But the other thing, the other element of Shields Family Hall that I love is the nutrition dining area for all student athletes. And that opened a few weeks ago, and I'll go in there every once in a while and just have a conversation, you know, with some of the kids sitting down. And what many things I love about it, but what I love the most is that they love the food, right? And student athletes at this level now, everything they put in their bodies is so important. And the food and the nutritional aspect of what's available in there for the different teams is off the charts. But what I like even more, it's the collision of teams. And it's such a great atmosphere in there where I saw, you know, kids from the women's soccer team sitting with the men's basketball team and the football team with the volleyball team. And the level of conversation going on. And, you know, the student athlete population here is about 8% of our student population. And to see them in there over the course, it's going to be different when school starts and classes, you know, go and people are busier. But right now, to see that level of interaction in there with all the teams, it's been fantastic.
Well, hopefully when Brian Kelly comes back, he can have a meal in there. I did want to transition a little bit. I've written quite a bit about the ACC, and we talked down at ACC meetings. And I didn't ask you this down there, I should have, but like, as I talked to ACC ADs and administrators about the relationship with Notre Dame and the league and Jimmy Phillips, do you look back at like the permanent damage quote and be like, I could have phrased that differently? Because I get the sense like both parties, well, maybe neither is getting everything they want from the arrangement. It's everyone, almost everyone seems to think it's very still mutually beneficial.
Yeah, I would say, Pete, it's definitely mutually beneficial. As I've said, first of all, I think Jimmy and I are not only colleagues, but we're great friends. Tough to find somebody who loves Notre Dame more than Jimmy Phillips, right? His son, just, you know, who was a student athlete here, just married a fellow student athlete from Notre Dame a few weeks ago and, you know, spent a lot of that wedding weekend. They were here on campus. A strong ACC is good for Notre Dame. A strong Notre Dame is good for the ACC. Hey, it's no secret. Was I disappointed with last December in many different ways? Of course I was. I'm still disappointed. I've got to turn the page. But what it moved into was a series of really good conversations between Jimmy and me about how we could work together. Not the two of us as individuals, but Notre Dame and the ACC. And I think there have been good things that have come out of that. And I think if we find ourselves in a similar situation, I think it'll be handled differently. I was just on an ACC call this morning. Went incredibly well. I probably talked to Jimmy Phillips about what's going in Washington, you know, 10, 15, 20 times over the course of the last 3 days. We had a great conversation last night. So I think the relationship is strong. I look back at that moment in time as like a family argument that's uncomfortable when it happens, but we kind of got up from the dinner table and maybe we're closer now than we've ever been.
Tim?
Silence.
Pete, I wanted to ask you, fans I think can see the 16-team playoff and the benefits of it and how it's almost a tweak in there. It's not a tweak for you, but it's a tweak for fans from a 12-team playoff to a 16-team playoff. What is the benefit in your eyes of the possible 24-team playoff that fans do not realize and maybe can't really comprehend college football doubling its playoff group from what has just been a 2-year span so far?
Yeah, and I would tell you, Tim, I am a huge proponent of the 2014 playoff. And I know certainly not everybody loves it. I think it's the best thing for college football right now and for Notre Dame. Why I think it's really important for college football at that level is an incredibly expensive endeavor. My fear is if it stays at 12 or even at 16, are enough universities going to continue to invest the type of money you have to invest to have a competitive football team? If they feel that their odds of making a 12-team playoff are just very, very low. The outcome of that is not good for college football, because the outcome of that, in my opinion, will be the creation of a super league where you have the same small universe of college football teams making it year in and year out. And that's probably a universe of about 20 teams. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see the creation of a super league. Notre Dame would be in a super league. But it's not good for college football. It's not good for college sports. The creation of something that would be viewed as a version of the NFL, I think, would ultimately, over the years, fans would lose interest. It will never be the NFL. It shouldn't be the NFL. The NFL and college football is very different. So I think 24 teams give more teams hope, give more universities hope, and will continue to give more teams access, obviously, to making the playoffs. And you see the repercussions of teams that don't make the playoffs. Wholesale roster changes, coaches getting let go, successful coaches getting let go once their playoff run appears to be at an end. So I think 24 teams is healthy for college football. Now, the negative arguments is, will it weaken the regular season? I don't think it will, because still where you're seated, how you do is still going to be vitally important. Why I think it's good for Notre Dame, the access is obvious. You got a better chance of making a 24-team playoff than a 12-team playoff. But more importantly, I think it just helps everybody, including us, with scheduling. More great rivalries, particularly, you know, conference, outside conference rival, extra conference rivalries, right? The Notre Dames and the USCs, the Florida States and the Floridas. All of these great games, these rivalries that have developed over a century, have a better chance of continuing. Because in a 12 playoff system, it's tough to justify any loss. And in a 24 team playoff, the value of a great win will still be high, but there's such thing as being able to weather and maybe even have an advantageous good loss.
Almost benefit from Ohio State and Texas playing at the beginning of a football season.
Correct.
Even a loser.
Now, what's difficult about the 2014 playoff is it would require the Power Four conferences to no longer play their conference championship games. And that isn't me interpreting smoke signals. That's just the truth, and that's been discussed by those Power Four commissioners. So the key aspect here is the media value that we believe we can derive from moving to 12 to 24 more than offset the loss of media value from those conference championship games. And that's the process and the research and analysis we're doing right now.
Pete, how would the expansion of 24 teams in the playoff impact the overall bowl system?
Yeah, I think it would just create one more kind of weekend of games, Tim. And I think what I also love about it, I think there's a really good chance that there could be two rounds, if you will, on college campuses. You were all here for the game against Indiana a couple of years ago. That was as good as it gets. That atmosphere, the Friday night, and these games on college campuses, they're so powerful. But I've also made the statement, they're only powerful if the student body's there. And so if you kind of do two rounds, kind of right out of the gate, back-to-back weekends where kids are still on campus around the country, the college campus games are not going to be nearly as good or as powerful or as meaningful if they're during Christmas break, New Year's break, and all the kids are back home in their hometowns. So I think it only adds about a week. We'd have to talk about things like the Army-Navy game, and we'll certainly protect that game and how that factors into it. So there are a lot of moving pieces, but I don't think it greatly disrupts the college football calendar, particularly if you acknowledge the fact that the conference championship games will go away.
I was going to say, this is kind of a lighter question, but you were a fan before you were athletic director. You were a fan before you were a student. How many seasons have you anticipated of Notre Dame football at the level of this one?
I would say the last time I was as excited about this season was my freshman year at Notre Dame. We had just come off being national champions. We had Tony Rice coming back, Stonebreaker. We had that unbelievable backfield. That team, my freshman year, yeah, we lost that game to Miami. But boy, we were tearing through teams. And I remember coming here and showing up for my freshman year thinking, this is going to be a really fun year. I'm that excited again.
I wanted to go back quickly. On the disrupting the football calendar, does it disrupt expanded playoffs? And this is more important to Notre Dame and high academic institutions. Does it disrupt the calendar for academics? Does it disrupt Notre Dame's football players being involved in 2 weeks of or a week of finals preparation, a week of finals? And outside of that, because that doesn't affect every program in the country, with the ubiquitous transfer portal sitting in the middle of this, is there such thing as a college football calendar that can be built around semester considerations?
Yeah, we've actually made that point. And as you know, I'm on the CFP management committee. And we talk about, you know, when we were talking about potential television windows, and you think back to the week of the Indiana game, we had it on Friday, and credit to Notre Dame and our provost, John McGreevy, for earlier that year agreeing to adjust the exam schedule and to have exams end. And also credit to Notre Dame for keeping the dorms open So the student body had a place to stay. And that's even before we knew we were going to make the playoffs, right? And whether we were going to play on Friday or Saturday, but keeping the dorms open until Sunday at noon that year. We had talked about, hey, would we ever play that game on Thursday or Wednesday? And not just me, but others, like, wait a second, that's exam week for a lot of universities. Like, you have to remember the academic calendar. And it gets tough. But Notre Dame and people involved at the highest level of Notre Dame, whether it's John McGreevy, our provost, Tricia Belia, who's our key academic representative, obviously Father Bob. We sit down, we go to our faculty board, we think through these things and making sure that, okay, we have to respond to the changing environment, in no way jeopardize the academic integrity of what we're doing. And if we had to adjust, we'd adjust. We would treat that game just like one more game, whether it's home or away, and we would find a way to make it work.
Pete, back in your days, when we were talking recruiting, the word admissions was always on everybody's tongue. Would a guy get in? Would he be accepted by the admissions department? We don't hear anything about the admissions department anymore in the process. Now we actually have high school juniors reclassifying and coming out early and going to Notre Dame. How has Notre Dame been able to navigate that and make that work within the structure of the university?
Yeah, we work hand in hand with our admissions department, led by Mickey Kidder, and recruit by recruit. And it's no secret, right? We have to be incredibly selective and opportunistic, particularly in the transfer portal, because it can be very difficult to have an undergrad transfer come into Notre Dame with the number of credits he or she has from their former university. And that's why you see, to Marcus's credit, we don't have a lot of people leaving the program, and we're very opportunistic about who comes into the program. And credit to Mickey Kidder and her team, who's done an amazing job. And credit to Mike Martin on the football side and Pat Garrity on the men's and women's basketball side of constant dialogue. And, you know, having Mickey sit down or her team and meet these individuals, because we have to know, I mean, obviously, if we're looking to recruit a person, we have great confidence that they can succeed in their given sport. We and Notre Dame admissions have to feel that that young man or woman can succeed academically, because if they can't, it's not fair for that person, because they're not going to be happy here. And they're not going to stay at Notre Dame. And that's not good for the program. The last thing, whether you're talking about football, men's basketball, women's basketball, any one of our 26 programs, it doesn't do anybody any good to have a young person come to Notre Dame who's not going to have a rewarding, enjoyable, and successful experience. And part of that experience has to be what you do athletically, but as importantly, more importantly, Jeremiah Love has said it recently, Kyle Hamilton has said it recently, it's the academic experience you have here that differentiates Notre Dame from so many and is part of the overall experience. So this idea that academic admissions has been lowered is not the case. I think the level of dialogue and discourse has gone up dramatically, and that has led to a really healthy back and forth and a healthy process. And I think our graduation rates and academic grade point averages prove that out, Tim.
We could probably keep you here for 40 more minutes, but I think it's important. We thank you for carving out this much time for us actually on a Wednesday. It was a well-timed appearance on our podcast. I know Pete Sampson is not available Monday to join us to break down the camp preview, but if you want to jump back on Irish Illustrated Insider Monday and talk about the freshmen who are going to make an impact, you're more than welcome to do so anytime this August.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. And thanks for everything you do for Notre Dame and Notre Dame athletics. We really do. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, guys. Welcome back to segment two of our conversation with Notre Dame Director of Athletics, Pete Bavacqua. I'm Tim O'Malley, rejoined by Tim Priester and Pete Sampson. And guys, I just want to pull out a few items from our conversation. But number one, it's not official, but it's newsworthy, is that we asked Pete Bavacqua about the future of the Notre Dame Texas home and home. And he expects it to be played. And so I believe from his conversations, is Texas Athletic Director Chris Del Conte.
Yeah, I thought that was probably the more critical part of it, because when I talked to Bavacqua at ACC meetings, he was like, no, that game's getting played. So it's important.
You're surprised by that, right? You're surprised by that. Then.
No, but yeah, because it just, I think you guys talked about it on the earlier podcast. Just like as soon as an AD and head coach articulates that, that's not a like, oh, I just thought of this. It's like we've been talking about this for about a month and a half. So for Bavaco to be like, no, that's getting played. And I talked to Del Conte about it. You know, he did. Maybe the hedge is more when do we play it? Maybe the dates move around a little bit. I don't know. But that is positive because that is, I mean, it's such a helmet game. That's like, those are like Ohio State, Texas, Ohio State, Notre Dame, absolutely. Texas. Like, God, you can't get enough of that stuff.
Now, USC, a little bit different situation. And, you know, I think Pete Bavakwa felt like USC took liberties with the phrase anytime, anywhere. And, you know, I mean, because
USC, get your preview ready for tomorrow.
USC had to know, you know, okay, well, we'll throw out week zero. Notre Dame just came off playing Miami and Texas A&M to open the season. We'll throw out week zero. They're going to take that. I
like what Pete said, Tim. I didn't mean anywhere, any place, anywhere, anytime. Tomorrow at our house, I mean, you guys are taking some serious liberties here.
No doubt. And I did sound a little fanish in asking that question, but Lincoln Riley has been outspoken about it again, and the whole world knows. And like I said, more importantly, your alums at USC know that it wasn't Notre Dame that ended this series; it's USC. I hope they play in postseason.
But to both Pete's point and your point generally in this, the helmet game, the home and home, it's so important for college football. Like, I hope Notre Dame and USC play in the Pete postseason too. Just like Notre Dame and Brian Kelly could have played in a bowl game somewhere along the way. But a home and home is college football. Mm-hmm. USC walking back into South Bend. I know that's not the schedule. It would be USC is next. But USC walking back into South Bend after this. Lane Kiffin going back to Ole Miss. That's Lane Kiffin playing Ole Miss in a playoff game is not the same as Lane Kiffin playing LSU in a regular season game. Like, that is college football. And you know, we joke about we're not going to talk a lot about the Protect College Sports Act, but protect that part of college football, Pete Sampson, because that's what
the spiteful pettiness and rivalries in college football is really a feature of the sport. So I, you know, long may that live. Fortunately, USC has sort of killed it off with Notre Dame. I mean, Bavakwa, we covered a lot of ground. I mean, jersey patches, you know, where that's going. And I thought one of the interesting quotes is, I can't remember which one of you guys asked it, but the response was basically, you need to be a shark. Yeah. And he meant that in the, like, you have to keep moving opposed to you need to devour everything in your path. But I think it's a fair point. It's like, are they following a trend or following the money? Yes. Also, are they trying to get out in front of something that is critical to their athletic department and Notre Dame at large? Also, yes. So am I concerned in a pearl clutching way, like what's not for sale around Notre Dame in a college athletics? Yeah, a little bit. But the jersey patch, especially in comparison to what happened with the Big 12, where they got $20 million for the entire conference, that's there. Notre Dame, yeah, I think you got to give them a lot of credit for like hitting a home run off with this deal.
I realize that, you know, eyes glass over when you start talking about Protect College Sports Act, but it's just that important to Notre Dame. And Bavakwa said it's unsustainable at the current growth rate. I can't do the math, but they can do the math, and it's unsustainable. So there has to be something positive come out of the Protect College Sports Act promotion here. And, you know, I don't know, Pete, you're closer to it with the athletic, but I mean, I think that there's some optimism as they're moving forward here day by day, but I'm not sure.
It's out. Like, honestly, it's hour by hour.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so like when Bavakwa talks about having hundreds of calls with Sankey and Petiti, like I kind of take him at his word almost based on how furious this deadline is, but you know, next week, who knows if they're going to get done by the end of this week. It's just such a complicated undertaking. It's hard to talk about it in a, frankly, intelligible and digestible way.
I'm glad we broached the topic about the original comments of permanent damage done with the ACC. It's funny, if you go back and read it, he said, I don't want to use the word irreparable, and he didn't. He said he didn't want to use that word, and it seems like they have been mended because he has a pretty good relationship with many of the athletic directors.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what was unusual about it because, I mean, we know Jim Phillips and we knew his relationship with Notre Dame and Pete Bavakwa. And so, you know, when you say some harsh words about a business partner like that, it's a little bit unusual. But I, you know, again, I don't have any reason to disbelieve when he says that him and Jim Phillips are really good friends and they've mended that fence. And sometimes adversity within the family pulls a family closer together is basically what he was insinuating there. And so I think that's a good thing too.
I did.
Oh, go ahead, Pete.
Oh yeah. You mentioned the 2014 playoff and I talked to him about this earlier in the year and like his answers are much the same, but it was the scheduling component. I think that's, if you don't like the 2014 playoff, and I'm not going to try to talk you out of it, but from Notre Dame's point of view, the scheduling component of it, that is the biggest boost for Notre Dame if they go to 24 teams, is these USC-Texas conversations wouldn't exist at all, and maybe you would enhance your schedule further. So I think that's, if you don't like it, I get it, but there is a scheduling potential boost for Notre Dame if it goes that way.
The one thing I love about it, and this is the selfish fan, and maybe independent growing up as a Notre Dame fan as of independence that I still kind of really, I'm not kind of, I very much want Notre Dame to remain independent as an alum, is it was, this is like a byproduct, but it gets rid of the needless, and I keep saying it, conference championship games. The money from the playoff, it's there. They will figure out that's going to be part of it, is the media money.
No doubt. Jack Swarbrick said a long time ago, when you figure out how to make sure that the conferences get their money by not playing the game, then it will work.
You can't have it the way it was a great idea, the conference championship games in the old form of college football. It was, and if it was a 4-team playoff or a 6-team playoff, it would still probably be the way to go.
Right now, the result doesn't really matter for, at least for the loser.
The biggest result that mattered in that game was that Notre Dame didn't get in because the fifth place team in the ACC was Miami. That was the biggest conference championship reaction. Alabama was terrible and got in. Oklahoma was nowhere near playing for it. And they're also not conferences the way they were when these championship games were conceived, because you have 19 team conferences and 17 team conferences. You don't even play each other, as the ACC kind of pointed out. Pete, I know you weren't on our podcast on, what was it, Monday, and I was actually listening to college sports radio and someone was running down North Carolina's results last year, North Carolina football. Like, yeah, they lost to ACC champion Duke. I was like, did Duke win the ACC? I don't even remember who wins the conferences anymore. It's just not a thing.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, eliminate that game, start the playoffs right away. Then I can understand expansion. I'm not a big fan of 24 teams because I don't, you know, I think that,
you'd like to see 16 at some point first?
14, maybe? Yeah, I would like to see 16 first. I mean, you know, you have 24 teams, 18 of them, 16 of them can't win it.
No, I did like his point that if you have 24 teams, there are 30 programs. He didn't say this. I'm putting words in his mouth. He said if the current thing with 12 teams, there's 20 programs that believe they could win a national title, and they probably treat their fiscal calendar that way. If you have 24, I'm going to make up the number now. If you have 24 teams that can make it, you have 38 teams that believe they can win a national. They can get in the playoffs, I'm sorry, and then contend for a national.
But if you have 20, and again, I'm the only one that clings to the bowl scenario, but if you have 24 teams.
You didn't say the word bowl during the podcast.
I did, yeah. You know, if you have 24 teams in the playoffs, I mean, if you thought those marginal bowls didn't matter now, you know, it's going to be a total exodus of players.
This is a totally different topic, and if we do speak with Pete Bavakwa, like in a written form in August, kind of forgot to bring up what John Bryce brought to the podcast after some of the coaches' conferences, that those bowls could be played in week zero.
But I like...
Well, it's not a reward for your season anymore because 40% of your roster decides they don't want to play. But if you play at the beginning of the season...
It's not a bowl if it's in August.
No, but it keeps the bowl committees alive. I mean, the part of it is that the bowl needs money.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
And if you have Notre Dame playing in a bowl game, I mean, they're not going to play in El Paso, but let's say Notre Dame's playing a bowl game in El Paso against Oregon, I mean, it brings a lot of money to our favorites guys down there at the Sun Bowl. So it's not a bowl, but there is no bowl. It's just, it's hard to have the bowl when 50% of the people decide I don't want to be involved in
right.
it.
Right. Yep. No doubt.
I want to put this question to you because you guys are alums and have a longer history of Notre Dame football preseason expectations than I do. Does 1989 hold as the last time you felt this could be the year for Notre Dame?
I want to jump first, Tim, because I wrote about it yesterday in Monday Musings. Somebody asked on the board, I think 92 Bettis, Brooks, Meyer, and that team coming back was almost this, but there were still some questions. So I think Pete's example of 1980, Pete Bavakwa's example of 1989. I mean, everybody expected to win the national title.
No, I agree. And I didn't, as great as that 93 team was, I didn't expect it because 92, they were so good.
Yeah. Well, 92,
you just mentioned, they lost Meyer and Bettis and Brooks and, you know, others, Irv Smith. And
it was, so coming it was coming off the Sugar Bowl. 92 is what we believed would be a championship.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, 89, you know, you still talk, you talk to those guys from that were on the 88, that were prominent players on the 88 and 89 teams. And they will say, well, the 89 team was better than 88. You know, I don't know if that was necessarily true. Probably.
I don't think so.
Actually. Yeah. I'm not sure I do either, but the expectations now are, I mean, they're completely off the chart. The expectation is 12-0. Period. Yeah.
The problem is, Pete Sampson, the expectation is 12-0. That's not even half the journey of tough games.
You could have a 12-0 season that would be deemed a disappointment.
Yeah. No, if you lose 2 weeks later, I mean, yep. No doubt.
And you're going to play.
If you lost 4 weeks later, I think it would still be.
I'm underselling Miami here, so I won't say it that way. The regular season 12-0 might be the third biggest accomplishment because you beat Miami, BYU, and SMU, and teams you absolutely 100% should not lose to. I know you're not going to cover every game. You're not going to play great every game, but there's no reason for Notre Dame to lose to Stanford or Michigan State or Wisconsin this season. But there is a reason for Notre Dame to lose a semifinal to Texas. They're just as good. What about Georgia? If Georgia's back in the semi, or they get a hot Oregon or Ohio State team. Ohio State was the 8 seed, man. They lit up Oregon. You can run into that. You want to run into that juggernaut in the quarterfinals? That's tough. That's hard.
And it's, you know, that it's hard enough to pick. We were talking the other day about the value of picking on the day before the game as opposed to July.
Yeah.
which is in the game of football can be completely meaningless by the time the game is played. But, you know, I mean, to predict the playoffs, all you can really predict right now is the regular season. And even that's obviously very difficult to do in July.
Yeah. Anything else, guys, from time with Pete Bavakwa there? We'll have a lot more, of course, at Pete Sampson. We'll have stuff on The Athletic. We'll have stuff on Irish Illustrated as well. Tim Priester's Thursday Thoughts will be coming up tomorrow. And we will have, obviously, we hope you listen to segment one of this podcast with Pete Bavakwa because it was a lot more.
Segment two would be really confusing if you didn't.
I did want to bring up one thing, Tim, that I wrote down that I thought was worth mentioning when we were talking about Shields, about the camaraderie. And I don't know how much the football players are going to mix with the tennis players over the course of a year, but the camaraderie created by Shields where all the student athletes will eat at that facility, I think is a really, really great thing. I think it's a great thing for the non-football players, for the minor sport people to have that opportunity to do that. Friendships, relationships. It's what Notre Dame is about. I just can't believe, and again, I had an opportunity to talk to Jack Shields. I can't believe when I look at those videos, that's Notre Dame. That's Notre Dame's facility. Very difficult to believe when you think about the history of this program, who really has been chasing facilities pretty much our whole lives.
Well, if you just joined segment two, you're confused, but I suggest you go back and listen to segment one, as Pete Sampson mentioned. We'll be back next Monday with a regular segment one and a regular segment two, burning up the boards, so we can take actually all of your questions on Pete Bavakwa's interview. And part one, of course, will be a training camp preview. It's coming up next week, guys. Seemed like a short summer, actually, but, you know, there's, I guess, the 102 player countdown kind of just helped us move it along. I know, Pete, you read all those, especially from the beginning, to make sure. I'll get your review of the freshman offensive lineman later. For Pete Sampson of The Athletic, Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, I am Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening. Special edition of Irish Illustrated Insider.